Welcome to the Next Movement, y'all. This is E.
I'm Rob.
Here we are, solo. It's been a minute. We promise there will be more guests in the future, but tonight it's just E and Rob doing what we do. Sometimes it's important to go back to your roots, to take it back to where you all started. And we've been doing this for a while now, and this is how we used to do the show before we had guests. It was just me and Rob bullshitting, talking about albums that we love.
Just two friends talking about music.
Yeah, man. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. So, as you know, each episode, we pick an album to discuss, you know, one that's near and dear to us or near and dear to the guests that we host. And so tonight's my turn, and I chose to talk about Chronic. Now, in all fairness, I'm not going to front. This album came out in 1992. I don't know the month and the exact date, but I was either 8 or 9. So I did not have this album, and you could probably imagine why I didn't have it. But my dad did. And so I don't know if, I mean, I'm dating myself, but back in the day, there were like these cassette and like CD subscription things. Like, and how they would get you is like, you could get all these like CDs and tapes for like 1 cent. Before, like, you were billed, like, monthly or whatever.
You're talking about, like, Columbia House, BMG.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so my dad did it, and he got all these cassettes and stuff, and the Chronic was one. And I regret this now, but I don't think that he ever opened it or listened to it.
Wow.
Because we had this, like, in our entertainment center, there was, like, this drawer that pulled out, and that's where all our cassettes were. And I remember always opening it, and it was just sitting there. It was, like, forbidden fruit. Just sitting there in a wrapper. I mean, I knew what it was, because I knew who Dr. Dre was, thanks to BET and MTV. I mean, that's how I was exposed to the music on this album. But I just remember being, like, I could just take this right now, but the good little girl in me was like, you can't do that. Don't do that. You're going to get caught. So I never did, but it just fucking sat there, and it was just like such a waste. And if I could jump into a time machine right now, I would open that shit and listen to it. I would take it. And I feel like my parents would have never fucking known.
Till they heard this podcast.
My mom is never going to listen to this. So I will never be like, Mom, check out our episode.
But that's funny, though. It was like contraband. The Chronic was literally contraband in your house. Didn't want to get caught with it.
Things like that, like when you're a kid, I mean, maybe even more so when you're an adult, but I feel like things like that, when it's not allowed and you get access to it, it just makes it that much better.
Yeah.
I remember I'm like going down a rabbit hole here, but I'll bring it home. But I remember going to the movie theater and seeing Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and I remember just being so excited to be in the movie theater watching that. I was like glued to the screen because there was all this violence and swearing, and it was just fantastic. And I went with my neighbor, and his dad took us, and I knew, I was like, my mom would never, if she knew what this movie was, she would never allow this. But I don't think she really knew.
Yeah.
And I just remember being so, and I remember feeling the same way when I would see like the videos for this album on MTV, because there was a couple of them, like Fuck With Dre Day was on MTV, Let Me Ride, Nothing But A G Thing. They were all on rotation when this album came out. And I remember watching Nothing But A G Thing. And that video, like, even though it was edited, it was still not great. It wasn't great for like a 8 or 9 year old. I can literally narrate that video. I've seen it so many times, but like, I remember the one part when the girl is playing volleyball or something, and the guy takes
her top off. Right.
I remember being like, oh my God. And like there was that, there was guns all in it, but like when the guy was like cooking on the girl specifically, he turned around, the gun was like in his back, like in his waistband.
Yeah.
And my favorite part was always when they fucking sprayed that girl down. With that stank ass girl who was like too good to be at the party, who like touched the banister and like wiped her hands and was like, oh no. And they sprayed her down with a 40.
That was your favorite part?
I remember being like, like, I mean, now as a 38-year-old woman, I'm probably like, that was fucked up.
That's a little problematic.
But,
yeah.
But I just remember being like, well, yeah, man, she was being mean. Like, you could just pick up the context clues, like, you're even like, being a kid.
That's what she gets, like, for judging them.
That's what I thought, you know? But, yeah, I just remember it being exciting because I'm just like, I probably shouldn't be watching this shit.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I mean, in the music, too. Like, I, listening to Nothing But A G Thing this week, like, I can hear that song. It doesn't matter how many times I hear it. I have my headphones on. I was, like, walking down the street, and I'm like, damn, this just hits.
Yeah.
Hits.
Yeah.
I mean, the music on this album, I mean, one of the reasons I want to talk about it is because the music on the album is so good. Like, it's, to me, it's perfect. Like, I think the album is perfect, like, production-wise. And, I mean, they use live instrumentation, and I didn't know that. I mean, obviously, when I was a kid and stuff, like, but growing up and, like, reading about the album and stuff like that and doing my research, like, I don't think I would have realized that necessarily when I was younger, you know, and that just makes the album, I don't know, that much greater for me.
Yeah, it's such a great-sounding record.
Yeah.
You know, when we talked about Low End Theory, we talked about how sort of timeless it sounded. I think this feels timeless also, like, in a different way somehow, but it just, it sounds great. It still sounds great. And obviously, so, you know, it's no secret. Obviously, this is like the beginning of the sort of G-Funk era that,
yeah,
that Dre really, really developed a sound for. And I still love it. I mean, in a similar way to the jazz samples, you know, you sample some jazz up, loop that up, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But same with, like, the funk and soul that Dre was, like, pulling samples from on this stuff. I just can't get enough of it. It sounds so great.
Did you know that he was inspired to do this album the way that he did it after hearing the Low End Theory?
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. I read that today.
Wow.
And I thought that was so interesting because I was like, huh. I mean, because they're obviously two completely different albums, but it didn't really elaborate on why, like, the reasons why, like, you know, the elements of the Low End Theory that, you know, attracted Dre to sort of, you know, make the Chronic the way that he did. But I just was like, wow, that's so fascinating to me.
It's interesting. I wonder if it has to do with the like live playing, like, integrated with the samples.
Probably.
Like they did on Low End Theory.
Yeah. But I was just like, huh. I mean, I remember, I mean, this album was huge here when I was a kid. Like, so this is an album that was definitely, people had, like, my cousins had it. We watched the videos on MTV all the time. Like, this was definitely something that was heavy hitting on the East Coast.
It was like crossover. It was everywhere. It was huge.
Yeah, everywhere.
It was crossover material.
Yeah. And, like, I talked about the excitement of, like, watching something you're not supposed to watch and, like, sort of being fascinated by, like, this, you know, the violence and, like, you know, I was talking about being in a movie theater watching Terminator 2. I mean, I think they utilized that on this album to attract people in the suburbs, people who had no idea about these neighborhoods, about the violence in these neighborhoods. They were telling these tales that were so foreign to the people that were listening to them. So it just created this huge demand for this content. I mean, yeah. I know that's why people were so drawn into NWA. I mean, and that's sort of, this is a continuation of that. But it was, I mean, even more so, because this album blew up.
I didn't listen to NWA before I listened to The Chronic.
Yeah, same.
So I wouldn't have known this then, but, you know, today, the contrast is clear. Like,
yeah,
what Dre was doing with on his own with The Chronic and on Death Row was making, like, this gangster socialite. This, like, gangster, where NWA was, like, violent and aggressive and you know, justifiably angry, and really heavy on the gangster shit. This was, like, gangsters walking around in their off time, going to barbecues,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
cruising down the street without the violence, without as much of the violence and the anger and the aggression.
Yeah, it was just like everyday life.
Yeah, which made it more relatable to me. I was one of those, you know, white suburban kids who was really fascinated with this music and this this environment, these places that Dre and others were like describing, like vividly bringing to life with this music.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to me and much more relatable as a younger person than like the NWA stuff was.
Yeah, they just had these stories that drew you in. I mean, even, you know, and this was before, like, way before, like, Twitter beef, social media shit, like, the feud with Easy, and I didn't listen to the album until I was a little older, but even watching the video, I remember watching Fuck With Dre Day, and they had that Easy stand-in, and not knowing anything about, like, the feud, I knew they were fucking making fun of somebody. I was like, well, that's obviously, and then I was like, oh, like a little bit later, I was like, oh, Eazy-E. But like at the time, I think I first saw it when I was probably like 9 or something like that. So I didn't put it together right away. But then a little later, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But like even that, like it was just, that shit drew you in, like this feud that was going on, like the story behind that and them saying, fuck Eazy-E, and basically on every track.
Everybody loves a good beef, you know.
Yeah.
I at the time, you know, when this record came out, I was like probably 12, 13.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't listen to NWA. This was like around the time when I really started getting into hip hop. Yeah. And I had no idea that Dre was in NWA. But I remember like hearing Dre Day and watching the video and being like, I don't know what this guy did, but he really pissed off Dr. Dre. Dre is really not happy with this dude.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later that I like put the pieces together. I figured it out.
Yeah. I remember the first time I realized it wasn't Dre Day. It was Fuck With Dre Day. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it just, to me, like the whole Death Row song has always been so fascinating. I've always, it's like almost like a fucking soap opera at times. Just the way that it unfolded, the history behind it. There's just all these like facts associated with their story and like with the albums and the creation of these albums, like classic albums. So I was just always fascinated by that. It just never gets old to me.
I was, in listening back to it this week, kind of, I mean, everybody knows Dre's a genius, okay? I mean,
yeah,
everybody knows that. And he's not just a genius, like, behind the boards. He's a smart businessman. But I listened back to this album this week and was just kind of blown away at, like, having gone from NWA and what he did there to this. He like pivots to Death Row and he comes out with this album that's already got this, like, he's already got this like cast of characters with Rage and Dog Pound and Snoop. And it's just so smart. I just was blown away at how he had found a way to put himself in the position to make this record with these people at this time. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a director. He just like puts all these people in the right places. He, you know, like, I mean, the production or whatever, but he's just sort of someone that curates the whole, like, the bigger picture. Yeah. So, like, he's on here rapping, but, like, a lot of the standout moments aren't necessarily coming from him. I mean, Snoop's the star in my eyes.
Absolutely. Like, it's really not that different of a formula than NWA, you know? Like,
right.
Dre's doing all the production, and he will rhyme occasionally. But Easy's the star. And it's the same with the Chronic. Snoop is the star. And I mean, the brilliance of it is, you know, similar to how Wu-Tang like made their group album and then slowly started to roll out solo albums, and you'd get introduced in a more intimate way to each member with each solo album. I mean, he groomed us for Dre. I mean, Dre groomed us for Snoop on this album.
1,000%.
You could not listen to The Chronic and be anticipating a Snoop Dogg record after listening to it.
I mean, I don't know if it was a marketing tactic, but it was a fucking brilliant one to do this and then go into Doggy Style.
Absolutely.
because people were checking for that right away.
He had the world's attention.
But I don't know what this album would have been without Snoop's contributions.
It would have been completely different.
Completely different.
And Snoop is like, he's great on this record because he's the star at times, but he also is the hype man. He's also the sidekick.
Yes.
You know, he injects the humor into this. There are times on this record where I actually find myself like enjoying his ad-libs more than his verses. When he's just talking shit, it's so great. It's so great. He was so good at that.
Even the game show skit. When it's him, and I'm assuming it's DOC.
Yes.
When they're, do you know what I'm talking about? When they're like, they're like playing like pyramid or whatever the hell the word association game. And that's, it's hilarious. Like, he plays all these different roles on the album. And I feel like Dre is directing him the entire time.
Yes.
That to me speaks of Dre's genius. Like, speaks of Dre's genius totally. Like, being able to put these people in positions where you know they're going to shine.
Just like the RZA in that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good comparison. I got to give it up to Lady Rage too, man, because to be the only woman in this crew, I mean, you had to really come with it and probably ignore a lot of shit. And I mean, she was like doing her thing on this shit. Like, she brought some shit to the table.
There's one.
And go ahead.
As I was listening back this week, there was one song. There was only one song that I played twice, and it was Lyrical Gangbang. Just to hear her verse again. Damn. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a kick up dust as I begin to bust on the wick whack. Fucked up suckers you can't trust. When I kick up, I lick up. Your face gets smacked up when I rack up. So all your motherfuckers just pack up. Or get slapped with a swiftness. If you think you're swift with the gift, Merry Christmas. Nest up that in your stocking. I'm knocking them off the boxing. Knocking them off their socks. Cause Robin is rocking. Breaking them down to the slab. Taking them down on it. Now what you wanna do, you wanna battle, see you up shit quick without a motherfucking paddle, rattle, that brain, I'm not the same old plain Jane, roll on you like a boulder, you're nothing more than a grain or a pebble, take it from the real rap rebel, not Bushwick Bill, but I can take it to that other level, you think you got pulled, then pull it, I got the trigger, so I figure you'll bite the bullet, then bite the dust, or what the fuck, do what I must, and what I must is bust a bubble or do some trouble for you. So skip to my Luda Lady of Rage is coming through. Yeah, she tore that shit up. She tore that shit up.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive what she did on this. But it's like you have all these, yeah, like the RZA was a good comparison because you just have this posse on here. I mean, like Daz is on here, Nate Dogg's on here, I mean Rage, but yeah, and then it's Snoop. Like, so there's just like
all the people that we would find ourselves listening to for the next like 3 years.
Exactly.
As Death Row like rolled them out, you know, the Dog, exactly. Daz and Corrupt and Snoop and Nate Dogg and the Lady of Rage. You know, those were all the people we were listening to. Warren just, G's on this record. Yeah. I mean, you hear his voice, he doesn't rhyme necessarily, but it's the whole Death Row family.
It came together in such a brilliant way. And I just appreciated that as I got older and actually was able to listen to the explicit version of this record. But yeah, I mean, I'm grateful to music videos because I mean, like I said, I've probably said this so many times on this our show, but like that was the only window I had into these sort of worlds. And I'm such a visual person. So I mean, that in itself too played a huge impact on how I like took in the music too, especially this music. You know, I shouldn't be watching it, but you know, it's neither here nor there. But and there was a lot of singles dropped from this album. I mean, Let Me Ride, Not My G Thing, and Fuck With Dre Day. They were all music videos.
Yeah, I'm someone who I don't really remember videos much. I definitely watched a lot when I was a teenager, when I was a kid. And I know that for you, like visuals are part of what like brings you in. But the videos on this album, I remember vividly. I remember watching these videos a lot. Mm-hmm. They were, like you said earlier, in heavy rotation. And they, when I think about this album and I think about the music, the videos are one of the first things that come to mind.
Yeah, they played a huge role, I think, in how people interpreted the music.
Well, they really hammered, you know, they really brought home that like gangster socialite aesthetic.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that the what's been deemed as part two of The Chronic, I was really present for. So 2001, that was more so that album I did was able to listen to. Like, and that's something that I did, like, I was in the moment for. Like, I, that felt something that I was able to actually, like, participate in versus this. I mean, I was a little bit with The Chronic, but, like, not fully because I wasn't allowed to have the album. Mm-hmm. But, like, I remember when 2001 came out and people were, I mean, I think a lot of older people were hyped because it was, like, supposed to be, like, The Chronic Part 2. Yeah. And so that's, that felt like special to me that I was able to partake in that more so than I was The Chronic. Mm-hmm. And that album is, I think, really good too.
Yep. Another very well produced album.
Yeah. I just remember driving to high school, listening to that album with my best friend like over and over and over again. And like, I just wasn't able to do that with The Chronic. Hmm. Not in the slightest. Right. But I imagine that people that were that age then did the same thing that I was doing with 2001. Totally.
Yeah. I did not have the full LP, but I had several of the cassette singles and wore them shits out. And it was on the radio all the time. It was all over the place.
It was huge.
And yet, Let Me Ride and Nothing But a G Thing in particular, like, I could listen to those songs every day. Just great songs. You have a favorite from The Chronic?
I love Fuck With Dre Day. I don't know if I have a favorite. I love The Day The Ends Took Over.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I can listen to that over and over and over again. Nothing But a G Thing still gives me chills. Like, and maybe because it's a nostalgia thing for me. Like, I just can, every time I hear the song, I can see the video from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Like, I can literally walk you through the video from start to finish. That's how many times I've seen it. So, I mean, I think that song will always be really special to me because of the impact that it had on me and how I was exposed to it. Yeah, so I mean, maybe that's my favorite. I don't know. I really probably Fuck With Dre Day, to be honest with you. I love that song so much.
Yeah. That like nice round, I don't know, it's almost like phased out bass that I think at that time like was something Dre, like it. That sound is also in What's My Name, Snoop Dogg's What's My Name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was very Dre sounding at that time.
But even like, I mean, I love that that's the first song after the intro. It's perfect. And then every time I get chills thinking about it now, but like when Snoop comes in and he's like, bow, wow, wow, yo, yeah, Death Row's in the motherfucking house. It's just perfect. It's beautiful. I love it so much. And I can see in my head, I don't know the actor's name, but the fake Eazy-E like dancing in the video, doing the running man. And I'm like, damn, they really fucked him up. They like had no, you talk about people now. I saw something the other day about like this debate on whether or not you should be, things should be off limit when you're like dissing people and rap. And they didn't give a fuck. They would talk about your mama. They would say all kinds of like that. Those feuds between those members and those groups were fucking brutal.
Today we're sort of like cringing at like Lupe Fiasco saying, "I wish they'd left Biz and taken you." But that was kind of mild. That's kind of mild compared to what these guys were saying.
Yeah, like it was just. I mean, I'm even thinking about No Vaseline. Like, holy shit. Like what? Yeah, like so I just like they didn't give a fuck. And that was entertaining too. But yeah, it would be interesting to I don't know that any beefs are that brutal these days. It would be interesting to see if somebody just said, "Fuck it, I'm just going to go in." I mean, I think Lupe Fiasco what he said was pretty rough. But like I think for the large part, like, somebody always got something to say when the beef gets to that level. Back then, it was just like, I said what I said.
I think you can't deny the impact that Biggie and Tupac's killings had on the way rappers beef with each other.
Which is, like, not... I mean, I get it, but, like, the foundation that that was built on didn't just come from them two, like, having it, like, it, all these people got involved, and it just, but I get it, on the surface, that's what people saw, them, like, fucking each other up, you know, who shot you, and then hit them up, so I get it, like, and then they passed away. Yeah,
I
mean,
I think the lesson that maybe folks took from that is, like, you can't really control where this goes. Right, after you put it out there, like, you might have one intention or one idea about where you want it to go. But, you know, the media just twisted that up to the point where it became something that it I don't think either one of them had intended it to be. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's the reason why you don't get songs like Fuck
With I definitely think it has something to do with it, because look how much hip hop changed right after that. I mean, it became a lot nicer, a lot shinier. People weren't out here, like, you know, talking shit about each other's mamas. Like, they just weren't doing all that after that. In a large part, I think you're right. What are your favorite tracks on The Chronic?
Probably Let Me Ride. It's probably my favorite. It's so funky. I love it. Well, like I said, I really enjoyed Lyrical Gangbang listening back to it. Just, like, listening to these other MCs. I don't know, but Let Me Ride is probably my favorite. Oh, I also like Stranded on Death Row. You got the whole Dog Pound on there. That's a good one, too.
I'm happy to report that I now own this album.
The vinyl? All right.
The explicit version.
And it's like, you've taken the seal, you've broken the seal, you've listened to it.
Oh, yeah. It's a reissue, but I bought it maybe like 3 years ago. Something like that. I got it at Brewery Town Beats. He had a bunch in the store, and he was just like, yeah, we got all these classics. I think he had like 36 Chambers, just a bunch of reissues. And I was like, you know what? I've always wanted The Chronic, and I don't have it. So
there you go.
I really want 2001 on vinyl.
I have The Chronic on CD. I believe it's the original, but I didn't buy it when it was... I didn't buy it back then.
Okay. In 92.
Yeah. A couple years ago... You know, I've talked about this apartment fire I had that, like, took out my entire collection. So I've had to, the last few years, try to rebuild. And it was like a year or two ago, I was at some flea market, and this guy had just a ton of CDs. And I don't think he was really into hip hop, because they were not priced like someone who knew what they were doing. And I came away from there with this giant stack of classic CDs and The Chronic.
That's like the best.
It was a good find.
You got to take advantage of people's ignorance.
Yep. I remember being like, how much are these CDs? And he was like, $3 or something. And I was like, okay, do you have a box I can put all these?
This is from 1992. Like, damn, that would have been more in Discogs.
I got Cypress Hill's first album in that bundle. Mm. And it wasn't until I got home that I turned it over and realized there was a dried cannabis leaf in the back of it.
Oh, like, shit. Yep,
somebody was a serious Cypress Hill fan.
Yeah.
So I got a little souvenir.
Don't try to smoke that.
No. It stays where it is now. How do you feel about... I got one more question. How do you feel about Bitches Ain't Shit?
I mean, it's not great. I mean, it's hard, man. It is hard to, like... You know, a lot of times when I first heard... You know, albums like this, I wasn't as educated as I am now. I wasn't in tune with who I am now. And so, you know, you listen to it. For me, I'm a 38-year-old gay woman. So to, like, listen to this stuff sometimes, I'm just like, man, I don't know. I still love the album. For me, that doesn't stop me from loving it. I mean, maybe it should, but I'm just kind of like, this is what the album is. This is what they were talking about. Yeah. Like, this is the world they were living in. So, is, you know, me being more educated now and stuff make going to make me say like, well, I'm never going to listen to the Chronic again. No, it's not. It's just not, you know, I didn't know until way later that, Dr. Dre was a little bit violent towards women, which that is more problematic for me.
More problematic than the song. Was.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he actually was. And he like half-assed apologized for it a couple of years ago and was kind of like, I'm going to paraphrase. I don't know exactly what he said, but I remember reading it and being like, what? And it was like, you know, I apologize for what I did back then. I was, you know, young, I made a mistake, whatever. And then it was something that was like, but you know, certain women are just like bitches and stuff. And I'm just like, okay, well, you should have just shut up and said, I apologize. I was wrong. Goodbye. Yeah. Like, so it was just like, not anytime somebody puts a but in apology, like it's not a real apology.
You're better off just
like,
if they're like,
but I know, then you're not really apologizing. So I just think that that was really problematic for me. And I'm just like, but I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, we can say the same thing about Doggy Style. And I fucking love that album. That album is really like shit.
Yeah. I think even more so.
Yeah, very much so. But I love that album, and I'm not gonna stop listening to it. I'm just not. So, yeah, some things make me cringe now. But
well, I think what you said is important. The need to consider context. When this album was made, how old these guys were when they made the song, and the sort of culture that they were coming from. That like influenced the song is all important to take into account. I did like that Dre, like he kind of sidestepped the issue on that song. And instead of his verse is not about women. It's about Easy, which was smart and entertaining and like kind of lets him off the hook.
Yeah.
For the misogyny, you know, but at least in that song, not the whole album, but.
It's a dilemma sometimes. I'm not going to lie. Like there's things that I listen to and I'm just like, come on, man. Like, I don't know, but like, yeah, I have to put it into context and I don't know. It's harder for me when an album has made an impact on me to just be like, no longer going to, you know, fuck with this album. Like, it's really hard for me to do that.
I think we're not great. And I mean, like the collective, we are not great at nuance. You know, that you could like, like this album, but also be critical of it. And like, you could, you could acknowledge its impact and put it in the Library of Congress while also acknowledge that some of it's not great.
And yeah, it's okay to do that. It doesn't have to be one or the other, but yeah, I mean, I almost picked Doggy Style to talk about with. We could have had this conversation all fucking night because that album blew up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do I think Snoop would talk about running the train on people right now? I don't know. I don't think I don't know that he would. I mean, maybe. I mean, he was, 19, 20 when he made that?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that makes it right, but, like, puts it into context, and I just don't know that he would do something like that.
When I listen to Bitches Ain't Shit today, and I think I can say this because I doubt that we'll ever have any of these guys on the show, but I really don't have anything like, in my opinion, like overly critical to say. I listen to the song now, and what I hear are little boys. What I hear are like some guys who have not really matured, who have a very immature way of thinking about relationships and women. And I'd like to think that as people get older and learn more about the world, that their perspectives on these things might change.
The education wasn't there yet, necessarily. Yeah. It's interesting because I really wanted to read it and I didn't get a chance to, but I think Pitchfork had an article about this and they were sort of saying like, hard to separate yourself from music when the artist is problematic. And I know that's maybe a little bit different, but I mean, it's kind of the same thing. Like if somebody is like a terrible person, but like you really love their music, I think it plays into this too. And I just, that's hard too.
Yep. there are, of course, you know, and maybe unfortunately, I think many examples of this in hip hop. You know, what came to mind as you were talking was when we did that episode about way back, we did an episode about It's Dark and Hell is Hot, you know, and X has a track on there where he goes into some detail about sexual assault. Yeah. That's really not okay.
Yeah.
I also thought about, I cannot remember the name of the song, but Prodigy had a song. It's like a revenge song. And he's talking about shooting this guy. He goes to pick up his kid from school. And that's when Pete gets him. And I can't listen to that. That's too close to home for me. It crosses a boundary for me. But Prodigy's still a legendary rapper in my mind.
I mean, I think a lot of it is, it's environment, man, and like being taught what you were taught. And sometimes I think it has, how can I say this? It's about, you know, if you're sort of like writing it in a lyric and you're putting in a song, it's not necessarily something you would do, but you're almost, I don't know, how can I say this? Like you're sort of talking about it so you don't do it. Makes sense?
There's something like cathartic about it.
Yeah.
I think there are a number of reasons why, you know, like someone might write a lyric about some of the things that we've mentioned, but I also think it's, you know, it's up to the listener. It's up to each individual listener to decide what they do with it.
What you can and can't tolerate.
Yeah, or how you make sense of it.
Yeah. I heard that DMX lyrics when I was probably 14, and that's how old the girl is in the song, I think. So I remember being like, oh, no, that's not all right. I still listen to him. I mean, I was so upset when he passed away. Like, so, you know what I mean? So it's not, that did not take away from my relationship musically with him. It's complicated.
Yep.
I don't know. It's like, whenever you have a relationship status, it's complicated. It's just like, it's not black and white, man. Right. Like it's complicated shit.
People are complicated.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how we interpret their music. It's complicated.
Including Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg.
I do hope somebody picks Doggy Sock because I really do want to talk about that album because it's so good. So, yeah, The Chronic is always going to be near and dear to me because of the nostalgia it drums up, like, you know, most albums do for most people. And again, I'm happy to report that I finally own it, although I still regret not stealing that sealed cassette from my dad. Hmm. The end. And that's all I'm going to say about The Chronic.
All right.
This has been The Next Movement. Thank you all for tuning in. This was just a step back into time, back to our roots, to where it was just Rob and I talking shit about an album we love. So it was fun to do this. So stay tuned. More good stuff coming your way. This has been The Next Movement. Peace, y'all.
1, 2, 3 into the four. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance, so back on up, cause you know we're about to rip shit up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Too low, death maker, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake this. But back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand. From a young G's perspective.